we get much higher. So
high. Hello, Del.
A very good afternoon to you, Andy.
Are you feeling okay? You look like you might just be starting to come down with something. Are you okay?
I am, yeah. Well, that leads us into my first question for you. How much football is too much football?
Give us a call on this one. 1-300-736-736. Because it's a good question. Yeah. And I reckon it's one that people who work in it every day and, you know, often double up on weekends, have a slightly different view about this. Mm. And I think people inside the industry, people like us, we need to remain really mindful that our view is not necessarily the view shared by fans. And I'd love to hear from you. Has it been too much? Have you liked the kind of almost daily fare that's been dished up over the last couple of weeks?
Well, let's just put it into context. So for the first four rounds, there's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it's spread out nice and evenly. And what the AFL have done really well this year is they put huge games on Thursday night. So it gets a huge audience. But the last 2 weeks has been 10 games of football in 11 days with only a Tuesday off going back to last week. I'll take off my media hat for one moment, Andy. My only complaint, my only concern with having that much football is I miss the build-up. Oh, I miss finishing football on a Sunday twilight and dissecting your team and every other team. And this is just as a supporter, not as working in the media. And then going, oh, good, we've got 3 or 4 days until that build-up and that feeling of I cannot wait for Friday Night Football, instead of thinking, oh, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, there it is again.
Oh, there it is. It almost becomes like the Big Bash. It's just on. You turn on the TV at night and there it is again. There's a game on at 7:10, ready to go.
Was that a round 5 game or is it round 6? Yeah. Where does that fit in the scheme of things?
Particularly the way that the calendar falls this year with the Anzac Week and Easter all falling into this 10 and 11 days. I just thought there was an opportunity just to maybe cut it a tiny bit.
What do you think? Do you like it? You've explained the fact that you like the build-up.
Yep.
But do you reckon games lose a bit of...
Yeah, I do. Yeah. In my take, yeah. I think the Anzac and the Easter weekend, it is what it is. But knowing that there is 10 games in 11 days, I would have liked for the previous couple of rounds to be a bit more traditional, just the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I don't mind Thursday nights as a feature.
Yeah.
Not every week. So now we've had 6 weeks of football and it just feels like it has been a lot. Just need to take a breath. I'm glad that we are now going back to the traditional three days of footy.
One thing I love it, can't get enough of it, should be Thursday night every week. That's the stuff that's coming through off the text machine. We have a duty, I reckon, we being those that have AFL accreditation and a microphone in front of our noses every now and again, to be really mindful, I reckon, of not letting the workload, and this is not a woe is me at all, this is us, this is me trying to send a message to the brotherhood and sisterhood who do cover the game now, that we should never let the workload and the repeat and go again and rinse and wash and the cycle ever affect our enthusiasm for the product?
Absolutely.
I reckon it does. If I'm hand on heart, I reckon and it normally happens a bit later, sort of like around 10, 11, 12, you get into the depths of winter, everything seems to be a bit established.
Yep.
I reckon there's a bit of that about the way the game gets covered by people in the media. They're working hard, they've done a lot of games, and they start to get a bit jaded, which I think the game and the fans deserve.
I can
a bit better than
completely
that.
Understand that if you come home from work on a Thursday night, there's nothing else on TV.
Mm.
You know, Bachelor in Paradise isn't on a Thursday night, Andy.
Well,
so why wouldn't you?
You would know.
I'm just staring you. So why wouldn't you watch the football? I completely can relate to that. And I'm sure if I was a kid and my team was or wasn't playing as I was growing up, I would have stayed up all night trying to watch that particular game and then been exhausted for school the next morning. So I do relate to that and I can understand it. I just feel like there's an opportunity to take a breath, to get that build-up and that excitement getting back for games.
I need more football. It's only Monday. I'm already getting the shakes. I need another hit. 24-7, please. Can't get enough. Awesome. These are all different texts. I'd love it if we had a Monday night, says George in somewhere North Otterburg, I think. Nah, loved it. Spewing, there's no footy on tonight.
Okay.
So that's coming through.
There we go.
And I'm glad that, Kaz, in the middle of all of that, you've sent a message about before, and I did not have this down to mention, but I just want to stop for a moment because Kaz has sent through a text to remind me. One of our great mates, a man we spent a lot of time with on the radio station, Mark Allen, has publicly, through a really good piece with Johnny Ralph in the News Limited Press on the weekend, revealed the battle that he's got in front of him with his stage 4 liver and bowel some of us knew about it a while ago. Marco didn't want it to be public, but clearly enough people know about it now that he's just sort of, oh, look, rather than deal with everybody individually and the well wishes that are coming in, I'll just put it out there. He got the fight of his life in front of him, that bloke, and personally can't wish him enough strength and luck through the whole process. So,
well said. Well said. We wish him all the very best.
We do. So, Marco, to you, we're in your corner, my friend. Steve's on the road, 1-300-736-736 if you want to jump on the line. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon. How are you going?
Good, mate.
I was surprised to hear you say how hard work it is in the media covering footy. There's a lot of people out there that would probably cover that job, and I think your degree of enthusiasm is an expectation.
I couldn't agree. That's exactly what I'm saying, Steve. Hopefully it doesn't. I'd like to think that I'm one that's got, you know, enough enthusiasm even through the, you know, the grinding part of the season. But I think I'm just putting it out there. I think it's a reality. I think it does affect some people on the way through.
Can I say, from my perspective, I've worked a lot of those Thursday night games, and I've been genuinely excited because of the contest of about who's playing on that particular night. So I'm not trying to say, poor me, and too much work, because let's be brutally honest, we work the football season. So I'm not trying to cry poor or anything like that. I'm just speaking, if I was outside of the working capacity, that I loved, particularly growing up, going back to those days, the build-up. Yeah. The conversation for 2 days about the previous weekend, the conversation for the following 2 days about what's about to happen that weekend. That's the bit that I feel like we are just missing a little bit, particularly off the back of 10 games in 11 days.
I think that's a really valid point, a really, really valid point. So that's done and dusted. We get into the sort of a more traditional routine, you know, from now for the next 6 or 7 weeks before we get a couple of the Thursday night games reappear. What's the biggest takeaway for you from, is it a positive what Geelong's been able to produce, or are we diving down to the other end of the table and we're going to be glass half full about it? What's your biggest takeaway from footy after 6 weeks?
Geelong continue to surprise us. I have full respect for what this football club's done, and unfortunately I was down there yesterday when they celebrated their 10-year anniversary of the 2009 Premiership, so well done to them. But I had, going back to the start of the year, I had Hawthorn, Sydney and Geelong all being out of the eight. I just thought it was just a changing of the guard, but there is something special about that football club, all football clubs, you know, those three in particular. You have to respect and admire what they've been able to do for such a long period of time, but they continue to get the job done. And what I complimented yesterday was a couple of individual players, but I wanted to compliment Chris Scott and the coaching staff. I look at someone like Gary Rowan. Now, Gary Rowan had every opportunity. I just want to use him as the example to highlight what they're doing down there and why they are really, really successful. Gary Rowan had every opportunity at the Sydney Swans. He played out of the goal square, full forward. He played as his high half forward to use his speed. He was on the wing. He went to the halfback flank. He was the extra number behind the football. He tried everything. Yeah. They tried everything with him. It doesn't click. There's just something about that system. Maybe it's the restriction or the style or whatever it may be, it just didn't work. He comes down to Geelong, and I said this, he's doing things that I did not see him do once in Sydney, and maybe I didn't cover the game as closely. There was a passage of play in the last 4 seconds of round one. They played the Pies, and he chased from his own forward pocket and put some pressure on in the middle of the MCG. I can't remember Gary Rowan running 110 metres to do that, and then ultimately getting the ball and they win the game. He did things yesterday. I love the way they're playing him. I don't know if there's anyone faster in the competition than Gary Rowan.
He's explosive, isn't
he? So why not utilise his elite quality? Yeah. Why not try and expose the opposition about why your players deserve to play AFL football? Gary Ablett to Gary Rowan in that first quarter was a thing of beauty.
Del, it's a reminder of you see something about a kid through their development phases that makes you draft them, and you draft them as a type of player, and then once you get them in there, you try and maybe reshape them a little bit and do the occasional different thing with them. Try and make them something they're not necessarily.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether Gary Rowan is a bit like Josh Jenkins at the moment, a real beneficiary or a victim in Jenkins's case of the way the team around them are
system.
Playing. Adelaide's ball movement has been so much more direct and quicker in the last couple of weeks against, you know, let's put it, you know, be honest, not top shelf opposition. St Kilda certainly is from a ladder perspective. We'll wait and see how they cope with the next few weeks. But Gold Coast and St Kilda, they've sort of taken the game on a bit more. I reckon Jenkins would have been far more effective the way they've played in the last couple of weeks than he was in the first few.
Probably agree.
And Gary Rowan, he's enjoying the way Geelong are playing. Get them on the spread. Get them on the burst.
It's fast.
Fast.
It's easy to play football when you're fast on turnover. There's a text that's just come through from Justin. I appreciate this, Justin. Is Dal all right? In yesterday's call, he sounded very excited and overcome with emotion about Ablett's delivery into the forward line on his left. Can you remember that one? Did you see that?
I haven't seen that. Is because we're coming. I haven't seen any of that game.
And I'd love to speak about Gaz at some stage and what he's doing and his acceptance of a new role. But yes, Justin, I was excited. Gary, what you get with 300 games and what you get with a man of his ability and ultimately talent and skill and all that comes into it is he just sees the game at a different pace to the opposition. He just picks times to move and not to move. I thought he was just sensational.
So was he forward, mid?
He played half forward. Half forward. Yeah, so he's had 28 disposals yesterday.
Perfect.
He kicks a couple of goals. He had 6 goal assists, so a record for him. The most he's ever had. 6 direct goal assists. Gary Rowan, thank you very much. But there was this one particular passage of play. The ball went to the half forward flank. He was getting corralled. They actually took away his preferred foot, being his right, so he rolls back onto the left and just lasers one through, slices the opposition. I think it went to Constable, set shot from 25 out.
Del, what I mentioned something about him last week, and it was, sometimes you have to hear someone else say it before you go, yes, that's exactly right. He kicked a goal the previous week against Hawthorn,
yes,
where he balanced up, sort of ran through to the left of the screen, ran through half forward, and then and he kind of, it's a really compact, powerful.
Shoulders are hunched.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Tim was saying that very few players, in fact, if any, in the history of the game, have been able to run at full tilt, balance up, and then stay really compact through the motion of kicking, you know, when they're at full speed, the way Ablett is and was and has been through his career. When you close your eyes and imagine or see Gary up in your mind's eye doing that, I've never seen a player who stays like he does when he's in full flight and kicking from long. Do you know what I'm talking
about? He's a thumping kick, isn't he? It's a little bit.
Yeah, and he does it. He caresses it.
The other player that always, when you speak about those sort of styles, was Ben Cousins for me. He was very hunched over in a strong kicking action at full pace.
Yeah, right, okay,
maybe not quite the power. He's probably maybe a little bit so hunched over that he didn't have the leverage with his legs to get it through. But Gaz can still bang him through from 50. That's not a concern.
Yeah, they've been brilliant. We'll get to some calls. Mark, I want to hear, before we get away from Geelong, I'll get your thoughts on Gary Rowan and the other couple of boys who want to talk about scheduling before we get to, maybe before and after the break. They have brilliantly addressed a couple of issues, I reckon, Geelong. What to do with Ablett, you know, and keep him engaged.
And he's accepted that role.
No doubt. And they've found speed. Mm. They've found speed, particularly out of their back line. The Irish kid, he's just evolving. They've got the athlete in Henry. They've found I thought their back line was with Lockie Henderson down there and a couple of Harry Taylor down there. They looked a bit cumbersome at times in the last couple of years, but that's changed.
No.
They can bounce it out of there, can't they?
Tom Stewart?
Well, he's another one. Yeah,
good to see him.
Has he played a bad game yet?
Not in AFL level, no. Maybe under 10s.
Mark's in South Melbourne. Before we get to the break, wants to have a chat about Gary Rowan. Fire away, mate.
G'day, how are you guys?
Very good.
What I find with Gary Rowan is, when he was at Sydney, with a too predictable game at Franklin and he couldn't play up to his potential, and now that he's down at Geelong, and it amazes me how Geelong picks up players that fulfills what they required. And Del, can I ask you about St Kilda with the organisation, with Geary getting injured?
Yep.
Who's our back line organised now? Because we just look so lost on the weekend.
Yeah.
And where are we going to go in the next 12 weeks if the guy doesn't play? Who's going to lead that back line?
Yeah, first of all, on Gary Rowan at the Swans, I mean, the feeling that we get when we watch the Swans is very structured, and some players, I think, have a ceiling about how well they can play in that Sydney structure, particularly when the same midfielders do the bulk of the work in the midfield. The same defenders are the main defenders in the back half, and you kick it to Buddy and read every other opportunity. So for the other 15 players in the team, you're just sort of filling in the pieces more than anything. So I do agree, but as I mentioned, well coached by Chris Scott and the coaching staff down at the Cats to give him a different look at the game. Jarryn Geary, I mean, he's got a lot of credit over the last few days. It's surprisingly he needed to get a severe cork in, go to hospital and have it all released for him to get a little bit of credit. I mean, Gears has still got a lot of work to do in regards to his football, but I think you hit the nail on the head. What he is exceptional at is being organised, and he just does the desperate things. He just does the small things that a lot of other players wouldn't or don't. So the next question is, who's the next organiser? I think Nathan Brown should be and could be, but his only difficulty is he's on the very last line of defence, so it's hard to communicate that. But I think we saw on the weekend, for one of the very few times this year, is they didn't really have one. Shane Savage doesn't really play that role. Carlisle's not there, so can't play that role. Dill Robertson could play that role, but obviously out at the moment. So who does it fall on? Josh Battles, a young kid, playing pretty good football, to be honest with you, but still learning the craft and probably really concerned with just beating his opponent. So it does leave him a tiny bit thin without Geary.
Hey, thanks for your call, Mark. Steve, if you can stick around, we'll get your thoughts on the scheduling on the other side of the break. Nick Del Santo's here with him, a cafe coffee in his hand. In fact, he's given it over to me, brought one in for me because he's feeling a bit crook. He's got the OJ in his hand, but I've got the McCafe coffee. It is absolutely magnificent. They are our coffee partner. Smooth barista-made coffee, available 24/7. North Melbourne, Dell.
Yes.
I had a quick look at where they've been from a draft perspective. It's going back to about 2011. You can dive way deeper into this than I have. But just where their first and second round picks have come through that period. Because you reckon if the list is going to bounce,
yes,
it's going to come from that body of players that they've built and acquired through that period of time. With all due respect to the players that have come through, and they're all, I'm sure, trying their guts out, they're not flying through that period of time, North Melbourne. They haven't really gathered a stockpile of players that is going to be strong enough by the looks of things.
So the first bit you're saying is they haven't gone to the draft enough to get low picks, so therefore exactly. They have to trade something out to get some value back in. That's what you're suggesting?
They've never really decided to dive in the way that maybe a Port Adelaide has, or maybe other clubs have, that just get some players out, acquire a raft of first-round picks. It means a bit of short-term pain because you've got to give away something good to get them.
Yes.
But if you go back through, and you can all do this yourself, we won't spend 15 minutes listing, but I showed you the names before.
Yep.
Is there reason for concern?
Well, the first concern is when you look through their draft from 2011 – probably not to right now because those current players will still be there from the last year or two. There's not actually a lot of their drafted players still at the club.
There's a lot
per ratio. It's not great viewing or reading. The other part on that, Andy, and this could be a really deep conversation if you analyse it really, go through the fine tooth comb. But you sit here right now. Who could they trade out and try and get draft picks for next year? Who's got value right now? And I look at it really quickly. Ben Cunnington is a star, so you don't want to get rid of him because you need to actually keep someone good. Sean Higgins has already changed clubs. He's not trading him out. I think he's just turned 30 and he's a star. But outside of that, who's got currency? We said, okay, we are. We're going to go back to the draft.
Yep.
Who are you giving up?
Who's the player that's going to get you a top-end first-round pick, maybe even a first and an early second? Who are the players? Look, you can argue the merits of that. But here are the 8-46 last year were their first two picks. 4-23 the year before that. 12-34 the year before that. 21-31 the year before that. Father-son, 2013, Luke McDonald at 8. 30 was their next pick. 15-37. 18-40. These are their first picks.
Yeah.
You're not getting guaranteed top flighters through the door.
You're never guaranteed.
No,
over the last couple of years, Luke Davies-Uniacke is at pick 4, and I think Jai Simkin picked 12-ish going back a couple of years. So they're the last.
Taron Thomas, of course. Who looks a real player,
But we just don't know just yet, and probably still with Davies-Uniacke as well. It's just too soon to be able to say whether that is a fail or a tick. But they look good. I mean, they'll be okay. But outside of that, and you have to go back probably a few more years than that, Handy, it just hasn't worked out in regards to the draft. Now, you speak about analysing your list, and I was a part of that going back 4 or 5 years where I changed clubs and went to the Kangas, and there was a few of us that did that at a similar time. But then going back to last year, analysing your list, to bring in those 4 mature age players, and they're not young.
No.
And some of them are on some really neat coin, which means you're taking it from somewhere else, or you don't have as much in the kitty to go again when required, that's where some mistakes can be made.
Can I ask you a really hard question? And you can take the fifth on this if you want.
No.
Do you think that Brad Scott's been there for 10 years now? I think he's done a fantastic job at North. I truly do. I think he's got everything out of the list, I reckon.
Yep.
And he's taken a few different approaches on the way through. Do you reckon Brad Scott will be there when they get it right and they come out of this next little... And you take the fifth thing, because I know
No, I do. And I have a lot of respect for Brad Scott, by the way he treated me personally when I went to that footy club. He was really, really respectful for what I'd been a part of in the past, and I had no issue with Brad. When you speak about will he be there when it fixes, this could be 3 or 4 years
and
now.
That's why I'm asking.
That's a different conversation. Now we're talking 14 years at the helm.
And that's exactly why I'm asking the question.
Well, reality and the AFL world would say no. Mm. If that's the case, and it's going to take where we think they are right now, and it's sort of a little bit easier in hindsight after 6 weeks to analyse their list and say it's not up to scratch. They're not playing great football. They have a lack of direction, whatever it may be, leadership. But we couldn't analyse that before the season to this point. So I put my hand up and say I was wrong. I didn't think they were going to play finals, but I didn't think they'd be this poor right now. But for Brad to get to be there in 4 years' time, he needs to be the next development coach as well.
Exactly.
He's the one
right.
That's going to take him. But he was also already that coach when myself, Brent Harvey, Drew Petrie and Michael Fredo were moved on, as well as a few others, that was when the development was coming. And we're now 3 years, is that right? 3 years into that.
Yeah.
So that's 7 years we're now talking of Brad Scott being the, when I say development coach, the rebuilding, rejuvenating, regenerating
exactly.
coach. No, I can't see that happening.
So it feels like they're at a really critical point of their kind of recent history right now.
Do you agree with that, just out of curiosity?
I do, and that was exactly the reason I asked, because I feel like if they back Brad Scott to be the man who gets them, then it will be a 13, 14, 15, 16-year tenure by the time. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Like, if Brad Scott's the right guy, then back him in and go the whole 100 yards with him. Like, just keep backing him in. But it would be an unusual call. It would be a very unusual call for modern footy to do that.
Can I put one to you? So we're speaking about, is it the best for the Kangas with Brad Scott there? What about the other way? Could it be better for Brad to go to another club?
Oh, well, I think his stocks are high. I've got no doubt.
Why? Why are his stocks high?
Because I think he's proven. He's a good front man. I think he's a good supporter of his players. I think, you know, from outside looking in, I think Brad Scott has always been a great defender of his players. I think he's a great front man for a footy club.
I can agree with that,
I think he represents the club really well. And I think his record at a club that has, you know, not had the facilities and not had the bucks and not been able to accrue the players that other clubs have had, be able to walk through the door, I think he's done a really good job.
Does he need to take responsibility for the list? I'll give you an example. There's another coach in the AFL that's going pretty well at the moment, and his response when getting pats on the back says, good players help.
Well... Yeah.
Does Brad Scott turn around and say, well, my players just aren't great at the moment, but he has been a part of it for 10 years conjunction with the list management?
I reckon I know who that coach is that's saying that to you. And if you look at what that coach has been able to get through his door in the last couple of years, particularly from a key forward perspective and a ruckman perspective last year, I'm tipping that was Ross Lyon that said that to
close,
you.
Very close.
And you see Jesse Hogan comes in and Rory Lobb comes in. Their players at North Melbourne would kill to have. I mean, North Melbourne would love a Jesse Hogan to walk through their door or a Rory Lobb to walk through the door, wouldn't they?
Of course.
Joel Hamling a couple of years ago wants to come back to the footy club.
Brad Hill on the wing.
Brad Hill, exactly. They'd love these guys to come to the footy club. So I think that bloke's 100% bang on.
Yeah.
And I don't reckon North has had the access to these sorts of players coming into the mix that other clubs have had to just give them that top-end boost. It'll be fascinating to watch.
One last one. You've been doing this for a very long time. How much responsibility does the coach have with the list management? Then a few messages have come up asking about Cam Joyce. Surely he has to take responsibility when he was involved in list management. Does Brad Scott get to wash his hands clean that he didn't put this list together? Where does it cross over, and when does it become someone else's responsibility?
I think you need to know each club would have a different absolute chain of command when it comes to that stuff, and some coaches would be more involved than others. I think Brad's been there for a decade now, so he has to take a fair share of responsibility for the list that he's got. I don't think he'd walk away from it. I don't think Brad Scott would walk away from that. I think he's got too much integrity to try and cast it to someone else. We're going to get to Stop and Go Del Santo. We're going to have to, an abbreviated version after this.
We just get chatting. We forget what we're meant to be doing.
We're on radio sometimes. Del Santo in the studio. Stop and Go Del Santo.
And I'm going to have to say a couple of goes because I'm getting abuse already off the SMS that I don't ever say.
West Coast is suffering a premiership hangover and is in real trouble.
Stop.
Go.
Real briefly, I'm going to speak about yesterday in particular. They had the charter flight. Stopped off at Avalon, like it. The only disappointing bit is when you perform like that, you don't get a private jet again, so you can go back economy like everybody else. But Andy, it just didn't feel right yesterday. Outside the first minute where Josh Kennedy kicks the first goal of the game, for the remaining three quarters and 29 minutes, it just didn't feel right. Mm. And I say this with a little bit of caution. It looked like they didn't care. It didn't look like they wanted it as much as what the Cats did. It just had a bad, bad feel about it. And sometimes you can see it, but you could feel it yesterday.
Watch this space. The loser of Carlton North will win the wooden spoon and be in the gun on Monday.
Go.
Brad Scott has taken North as far as it can go, and the Roos need some fresh ideas. We'll move past that one because we just chatted about it. Melbourne's midfield is a downhill squeeze and don't work hard enough the other way.
Stop.
Go on.
When you don't win the football, and you don't chase as fast as you can because you don't have the leg speed, it looks really poor. But I think the D's biggest issue midfield-wise is when they do win it and they kick it inside their forward 50, they don't cover the exits. They don't get outside and swivel ahead. It's actually a really difficult thing to do because often you want to watch where the kick goes. You want to admire it and you want to actually see how it plays out. You can't impact that contest. Your next responsibility is actually to close the exits. Get out to the flanks. If it is to come out, you're there to rebound it back in. They just don't cover the exits like they once did.
It's a good call. Alex Keith is the most improved player in the competition and would be in all-Australian contention if the team was picked today.
Well, let's have a chat about that. Let's stop.
Okay.
He was superb on the weekend.
Yeah, they kept kicking it to him without anyone near him.
You took the words from my mouth. Right. I thought he had a St Kilda jumper on there for a period of time. Tell me what do you think of Alex Keith as a player? What do you think when you say, oh, I'm going to get matched up on Alex Keith, what are you thinking if you're the forward?
Well, keep him accountable. Like, actually make him accountable. You know, make him worry about me.
He's an inexperienced defender that's learning his craft. He's got a good body size. He's probably going to want to compete one-on-one. So I'm probably going to want to engage him.
I would have thought so.
Not leave him spare and get our halfbacks and our mids under pressure just to kick it down his throat. You need to give him credit. He positioned himself really, really well on the weekend.
Spot on.
And even when he wasn't best positioned, he goes after that footy in flight. He just launches at the ball. Really impressive. Is he the most, was it underrated?
Yeah.
Or most improved?
Most improved. And would he be in all-Australian contention if the team was picked today?
His name would get mentioned in the defensive six. I don't know if he'd be in the best six right now in the competition.
Alistair Clarkson out-coached Brendan Bolton after halftime yesterday, and that is the primary reason Hawthorn got over the line.
I'm going to say go, but no, it was the players' responsibility, not the coaches.
Losing Tom Scully and Dylan Scheel has been a blessing in disguise for the Giants.
Ooh. Can we have a chat about that?
Yes,
let's
please.
Stop.
Yep.
Let's talk through that. A blessing in disguise. So you're suggesting that they were holding them back. You wrote these questions.
No, they have been written by Trent Masonhelder, our great producer today. It's an interesting concept, I reckon.
Do you think it's got any merit? You've got me by surprise here a little bit to think that Tom Scully's a good player. He was never holding them back. Had some severe injuries which wouldn't have helped along the way.
I reckon what's happened at the Giants is that we all said the same thing about them and they hated it, but I reckon it was true. They were all so good as kids, they all wanted to be the man.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be the one that got on the end of it. They wanted to be the one that finished it off. Well, they've got rid of a couple of those, but they can't have them all like that. They're all fine players. Don't get any of it, but they can't have them all like that. By list management osmosis, I reckon some of those guys have been replaced by workers who are still good players. Like Tim Taranto and Jacob Hopper are still good footballers.
That's the bit I think we've missed when analysing over the summer. You speak about Devon Smith, Scheel, like a few players have gone, but I think there's a reason why they've let someone like a Scheel go. I think the performance of Hopper and Taranto in particular, and just the grunt of them.
Yep.
Like, and I'm not taking anything away from Dylan Scheel because I loved him. I had him to win the Brownlow last year. I absolutely love him. Would have liked him to kick a little bit better on Anzac Day. It would have been a bit better performance. But I think those two guys are a better balanced midfielders. They just go at the footy hard. They chase back defensively. They don't give up. And I just think that gives them a better balance as a midfield, particularly with Callum Ward out of the team.
Yeah, they've brought in some lesser, you know, like Reed's playing a bit more footy. Langdon's playing. They've brought in some guys who just... Lloyd. They've brought in blokes who are prepared a bit to sacrifice a bit more, I reckon, than some of these other blokes did. And that's not a... That's just... I think a truth about the number of absolute gilt-edged top-quality players they had. I just feel like they're a bit better balanced this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay. I think balance is a really good word to describe what they're doing.
The injury-depleted Saints are set to slide.
Let's go, but okay. I agree with that. I think their next 5 weeks, it could be a bit messy.
At 1-5, with Hawthorn this week, Melbourne will not play finals football this year.
At 1-5, with
Hawthorn? And they've got the Hawks this week.
Well, I'm not sure if they make finals anyway.
Hawthorn beat them on the weekend?
Yeah, I think they get close, Andy.
Early game
depends
Saturday,
who, you know, it depends who comes back for the Hawks. Burgoyne. Who else is there off the top of my head? Stratton.
Stratton played. He played yesterday.
Stratton played yesterday.
Yeah, got through the game.
Is there, I feel Shield, like there's one Shield other. Shield played. Is there one other? I feel like there's one other.
Oh, there probably might be another defender. Is there another defender who's not on the side at the moment? Oh, we'll work that out. But
I think the Hawks win. Just... I'm sick of trying to make tips on what I think should happen. Yeah, let's go on what has been happening.
Richmond has demonstrated it can cover the loss of Alex Rance and they can win the flag without him.
Stop and agree. I think the change in their style of football and that hunger and that want again, which I didn't see from West Coast Eagles yesterday, it's up to them. It's the ball's in the Tigers' court in regards to their mindset and their ferocious defensive pressure. If they bring that... They compete one more time.
Dylan Grimes. Oh. He's found another. He's just said, okay, well, Rancey's gone. I have to step up now.
Yep.
He's stepped up. He's been awesome.
I still think they've got probably 5 weeks to actually get the correct mix of exactly how they want to play their football without Rance there. Mm. And the conversation going back when all these injuries did occur, and speaking to someone at Richmond, is if they could get to the halfway mark of the year, 50-50 win-loss ratio, they were comfortable because they thought they could launch from there. Well, they're already ahead of the ledger.
Yeah.
They've got a few back in the back pocket ready to go.
Fremantle, stop and go, Del Santo. Fremantle will make the top eight.
Oh, geez, you've asked me some tough ones today. Let's stop and have a chat about Freo, because I think they deserve a little bit of credit. Well, we touched on them earlier about their balance. Let me put this one to you, Andy. Let me just get out of the way for just a split second and have a think about it. At the start of the year, if you analysed Fremantle's list, would have you thought it was going to perform like it currently is?
I think we, the broad football community, we were derelict in our assessment of Fremantle.
Mm.
And I think...
Is that because we didn't analyse it close enough?
I think
or
so.
We just didn't see those players performing the way that they are?
Probably a bit of both.
Okay.
I reckon a bit of both. I reckon they've got... They're getting some really great performances out of quality... They're frontliners.
Mm-hmm.
Give me good players.
Yeah.
And I think they've got development out of a couple of others that maybe we just didn't rate. Ed Langdon, Ethan Hughes, the other boy off the left footer off the other halfback flank. He goes beautifully. Forgotten his name. They've got swingmen at both ends of the ground. I know Cox didn't play yesterday, but they've got the two mid-size at either end. They've got great key position talent at both ends of the ground. Oh, they're just better balanced.
Oh, yeah.
There's the word again. Oh, they're just they are not missing much.
Yeah,
in terms of what you need for out of
are
a
they
footy
missing cup. Lachie Neal?
Tucker was the kid I was thinking of. Well, I'd like to have him, but
of course
not,
they would. Are they missing Lachie Neal?
They're second on the ladder, mate.
They
so
are
no, so they're not. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
In.
Always good to see. That was Chip Frawley was the Hawthorn other defender that's still missing.
Of course
we got
it was.
There.
Somebody needed you to say something nice about Carlton. Can you do it in 5 seconds?
No, I can't.
Right.
Chris.
I'll see you on Wednesday if you're up to it.
See you, mate.
Nick Del Santo.